The views and opinions expressed on this show are those of the sponsor, Gross & Schuster.
Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Good morning. This is Pep Talk, Pensacola's expert panel with Meg. It is hot, summertime in the city, and we've got a fella on the line here with Gross & Schuster, our favorite attorney, Terrence A. Gross. He is incredibly qualified to tell you anything and everything about personal injury law. Good morning, Terry. Great to have you back on the show again.
Good morning. Glad to be here as usual, and there's not much time usually, so I like to jump in it. I've been, of course, a lawyer for 45 years, focusing on personal injury. And as I was talking about a month ago, I've seen a lot of changes in the law, tort reform measures over the years. And I think we had a show where I was talking about some of the older tort reform measures. But I want to take us forward to what's been going on in the past 2 years, because it's really turned the system upside down, and the average citizen really just doesn't know about it until they get a lawyer. And then once they get a lawyer, they go, "What? You got to be kidding me." And so now they're not only the victims of the accident, they're the victims of this alleged tort reform. And usually, you know, a tort is a civil suit. And they said before, they're making it more difficult for plaintiffs' lawyers to win. That's what it is. But what they're forgetting is that you have an innocent victim. So you're the one that got rear-ended by someone that was texting or drinking or just not paying attention. And now you've got years and years of misery and medical bills and maybe pain and suffering for the rest of your life. And then you're hamstrung because of this law, you're hamstrung because of that law. And, you know, the other thing that it's funny, insurance companies speak out of both sides of their mouths. They want to call lawyers ambulance chasers. They want to say that people like me are sue happy. First of all, lawyers aren't sue happy. If you file a lawsuit, all the lawyer does is work harder and spend more money. So the average lawyer is not looking to file a lawsuit, but yet that's the misnomer. That's the myth, the urban legend that they want to paint about dastardly plaintiff's lawyers such as myself. So we get thrown under the bus. But recently, in recent years, they've gotten two tremendous changes in the law. I even wrote the Florida Bar about this. That's created a perfect storm. A perfect storm meaning that these two in combination are forcing people like me to file suit prematurely, to file suit a lot more. So I'm not a young lawyer anymore. I didn't just wake up one day and said, you know what? I'm getting later on in my years. I think I'm just going to start suing a lot more. And so forth. And you have to understand, once a lawsuit's filed, what happens? The insurance company gets their own lawyer. Well, their lawyer gets paid by the hour. Does that lawyer that pulls the case, that gets paid by the hour, do you think that lawyer wants to settle immediately or in the near future? No, because they don't get paid anything. So they can drag it out and hit us with paperwork and bill for this and bill for that. And that's what happens. Just the delays, and people are just in shock how long everything takes. You try to schedule a deposition. Oh, that'll be 6 months. You try to do this. And so whatever, the can gets kicked down the road continually. So what are the two things that are making people like me file suit more? And I've always sued. Now, if you've lowballed me over the years, I have filed a lawsuit. But what's happened is all my career, I became a lawyer in 1979, and from 1979 to 2023, the statute of limitations for most torts, for most accidents, was 4 years. And usually in 4 years, that would give a lawyer like me many opportunities to try to settle with the defendant, to gather all the medical records, let the person finish treating, we hope, and maybe come to a settlement. Well, now they've cut that in half to 2 years. Now, you may think, well, 2 years is plenty of time, isn't it? Well, let me just tell you a very common type of a scenario, a very frequent case that comes across my desk. Someone gets rear-ended. They go to the ER. They got no broken bones. They get x-rays and CT scan, and the ER doctor says, you got nothing broken. Just lay low. Take some ibuprofen and don't do any vigorous activities for a couple weeks and try some ice or something, and you should be okay. And we hear that time and time again. Meanwhile, the person's not okay. So what does the average person do from there? A lot of people choose chiropractors, and that's not a bad option in this day because it sure beats drugs and needles and other options. So they may try a chiropractor for a while. That may help to some degree, may not help at all. It just depends on the person and the injury. And then ultimately, if the symptoms are going on long enough, either some medical doctor or the chiropractor, they start ordering MRI scans. Well, an MRI scan is inherently different than a CT scan because an MRI will show you what's inside of this. A CT scan is just a strong x-ray. It's a shadow box. Shows you if you've got a broken vertebrae, you can see the height of a disc on a CT scan. You can't see the integrity of a disc on a CT scan. But the MRI is going to show you subtle findings such as protrusions, extrusions, disc herniations, annular tears, and something called edema, which could be swelling caused by a recent accident. So all these things come into play. Well, a lot of people end up getting this MRI usually several months later because they've tried conservatively. They really didn't want a lawyer. They didn't want to go to a bunch of doctors. But unfortunately, if you're still hurting, you got to try something. And then after the MRI, if it's positive for one of these afflictions I just described, then the person may end up seeing a pain doctor, and pain doctors are medical doctors. Most are anesthesiologists, and may want to try injective therapies. It could be trigger point injections. It could be epidural steroids. It could be ablations or denervations or whatever they want to call it. But there's some that they put you to sleep in an operating room, you know, because of the size of the needles and the quantity of needles and the pain it would be if you were awake. So that goes on. And then sometimes if it's bad enough, then what do? You end up seeing a spinal surgeon, either a neurosurgeon or an orthopedic spine surgeon that specializes. And then, of course, even if they tell you you need surgery, most people are scared, as you might guess, of just jumping into surgery.
Right. If you just joined us, we're talking with Terrence Gross with Gross & Schuster on Pep Talk. If you've got a question or a comment, you can always text it in at 850-437-1620. Go ahead,
Thank
Terry.
So now you see the surgeon, and maybe they recommend surgery, and they start describing the surgery to you. Well, you know, we're going to go in there, and we're going to remove the bad disc. We're going to jack up your vertebrae. We're going to put some titanium plates in there with screws, and we're also going to do a bone plug, which either is from your hip, maybe, or maybe from a cadaver, and fuse that in there to support your spine so that you will get the nerve roots working so that eliminate all the numbness in your hands, the weakness in the hands, which you may have been experiencing, which is very common. But most people just don't jump into surgery, so it could be 2, 3, 4 years later. Well, we got the statute of limitations. So I wrote this article to the Bar Journal expressing that, A, they're making me file suit before a case is ready. In fact, doctors have a term of art. Doctors have a term called MMI, Maximum Date of Medical Improvement, MMI, which means you're as good as you're going to get. But that's after they tried everything. So if a doctor's recommended surgery and you're still chewing on it, then you're not MMI. You're not finished with your medical treatment. You may need surgery. And surgery certainly is very costly. Most of these fusions cost over $100,000, some up to $150,000, depending on the hospital and other factors. So it's a big change as far as evaluation with an insurance company, because insurance companies, if someone is told that surgery doesn't have it, when the insurance company, that they're not really good about factoring in future damages. They're saying, well, we don't think they're going to have it, so we're not going to throw another $100,000 for surgery on top of this. We're just going to offer you X. Meanwhile, if you have the surgery, well, then it's in the rear window. It's in the rearview mirror. So then, of course, they have to include the surgery and the pain and suffering. And now you've got plates and screws in your neck, and it's hard to call you a faker in the courtroom if you're walking around with plates and screws in your neck. So at the end of the day, surgery is a big deal. But with the four-year statute of limitations, I had room to let those cases kind of age and maybe find the right time to settle. At 2 years, I'm finding myself filing suit before the cases are ready. Now, I told you there was two pieces of tort reform that affected litigation and the filing of lawsuits. Well, meanwhile, that was the legislature that passed the two-year statute that Governor DeSantis signed. Well, meanwhile, the Supreme Court, which is in charge of procedure and rulemaking, they promulgated new rules starting January of 2025, and it's to speed the fast-track cases. So it used to be in the old days, if I filed a lawsuit in a judge's division, I say, well, I'll make up a name. We'll say I file a lawsuit in Judge Brown's division. Well, we could litigate with another lawyer, and if we're playing nice in the sandbox, the judge doesn't even know we're there. We're doing depositions. We're doing interrogatories. But the judge, you know, doesn't even see us. He's busy doing other cases and criminal and maybe divorce and all these other things. So doesn't even know we exist until we used to file a special piece of paper, and it'd say notice for trial. It'd say, Judge, we're now ready for trial. Then the judge would have a hearing. Then the judge would meet with us and set a trial probably 6 months out and set the rules of trial, blah, blah, blah. Now what they're doing is if you file a lawsuit, this judge within 30 days is signing an order saying you've got to do this by this date, this by this date, your trial will be this date. So they're trying to push and fast track cases once they're filed. Maybe it was a problem in South Florida where they're languishing. I've always resolved my cases, I don't think any judges ever complained. But now they're forcing me to file suit prematurely, and now they're also making me go to court prematurely. So it's a double-edged sword. That's why I called it the perfect storm, because these two rules together are now putting plaintiffs in a position to file suit too early and maybe go to court too early, maybe within 3 years of an accident where they still haven't had surgery, but they're thinking about it. And I can't tell you how many people, I mean, dozens and dozens and dozens of clients that I've had that waited 3, 4, 5 years before they actually had the surgery because they were just scared or they just didn't have time. Maybe they're waiting to retire, or maybe they're waiting for the kids to go off to school or something. Whatever the reason was, you know, spinal surgery where they're putting plates and screws in your neck or back is a big deal that most people don't take lightly and don't just quickly jump into. So I've just seen that scenario. So I had this exact case. So I had a man that was, we were in litigation, and we had one of these hearings with the judge. And as I was giving my little opening statements to the judge, and I said, by the way, I wrote an article to the Florida Bar about this. The judge interrupts me and goes, Mr. Gross, I read your article, and I couldn't agree more. So here's a trial judge that's not as happy with these rules either, because what they're doing is loading these judges up. So cases that used to work out without judicial intervention The judge is being forced to intervene in every single personal injury case that gets involved early on that most never even came to his radar. And so now the judges are already overworked. Unlike federal judges, most of these guys don't have a bunch of law clerks. So every federal judge I know has a law clerk. It's either a young lawyer or maybe some kid in law school that does all the research and helps the memorandums of law and, you know, a big help. Well, they don't have that luxury in the state court system. They don't have the funds to give each judge that. Plus, every so often, I know that our circuit, we're the first judicial circuit, we ask for more judges. We've asked repeatedly, legislature, please fund this at least one or more positions for circuit judges in Escambia, Santa Rosa, Okaloosa, Walton counties, because there's just not enough judges. And they said, you don't need it. We can't afford it. And so, you know, and also it used to be when you became a judge, you were a judge till age 70. They forced you to retire, by the way, at 70. Now I'm starting to see some of these judges burn out and they get on the bench. They want to be a judge. All the, you know, the privileges that go with it, the respect that go with being a judge and so forth. Now a lot of them get up there and go, oh, my God, I can't believe what I'm getting paid in the hours I'm having to work. And a lot are burning out. I'm seeing a lot of judges retire early. You know, they couldn't wait to be a judge. And then after 5 or 10 years of doing it, they're saying, I'm out of here. And so there's a lot of turnover that I'm seeing. And now that's just going to cause more. So I'm getting back to this tort reform. That's what's happening. So we're having an explosion of litigating cases. If you talk to all the insurance defense lawyers, they're swamped. They can't hire enough lawyers. And they're hiring all these young lawyers out of the state attorney's office and law school and public defender's office to help defend these cases because there's so many being filed. So in our law firm, we're filing way more than normal just because of the two-year statute. And you don't wait to 2 years to file a lawsuit. You usually 2 or 3 months before you want to file just to make sure everything's done correctly and you got all the defendants and so forth. So any competent lawyer is not going to wait to the last day before a statute runs.
So, Terry, what should someone do if they have an accident and they need an attorney as a plaintiff now with this tort reform? I guess give us some advice on how to proceed and go forward.
Well, you still got to get a lawyer, but what I'm trying to explain to you, though, no matter what lawyer you pick, every lawyer, whether they're good or bad or young or old, has to abide by all these rules. And I'm just saying it's taken a lot of the gamesmanship, and so it's leading to more litigation. And again, litigation's way more costly. We just tried what I consider to be a very small case. It wasn't like any big death case or whatever, and it cost us $50,000 to go to court on just a garden variety case because experts charge so much now. You take a doctor's deposition, it could be $6,000. And then they bring in experts. So the insurance company, if you've got a chiropractor and a pain doctor and a neurosurgeon and a radiologist, well, they want to match that. They hire their own radiologist. They hire their own neurosurgeon. They may hire one of these, they're called accident reconstructionists, but you know, maybe they get in there to say, oh, this was just a low impact. There's no way they could have gotten hurt as bad as they're saying. This impact didn't have enough forces to cause the injury they're complaining of. So whatever, it just gets into a very costly situation. So once you file a lawsuit, attorney fees go up for every attorney, and costs go up for every attorney, and then it can drag out because once again, it's going to drag out in that the insurance company's lawyer is going to try to drag out as much as they can, although we got the new rules that still you got a judge, you know, setting cutoff dates. So it's more stressful probably for lawyers, more stressful for certainly the plaintiffs. And the average person that gets a lawyer in a personal injury case, they're not looking to sue. Every now and then you get somebody that's, you know, of that mindset. Most people, the average person on the street, they don't want to go through all. It's like going through surgery. Filing a lawsuit and litigating a case is pretty much like having surgery. who really wants surgery? Now, you'll have it if you really need it. If your gallbladder, your stomach is killing you, you will have gallbladder surgery, or you will have one of these spinal fusions I'm talking about. And eventually, if it gets bad enough, well, you know, same thing with you know, it's just like, or like getting your tooth pulled at the dentist. Nobody wants their tooth pulled at the dentist. But again, that's what litigation is. It's very stressful. They're taking the deposition of the plaintiff. They get to subpoena all their Facebook records, all their Twitter records, all their Instagram records. It's all fair game now under our rules. So I'm just trying to tell you that it's just, the world is just changing. What they do is they want to throw lawyers like me under the bus. Just one broad brush. You know, we're all ambulance chasers. We're all Sue Appy. But they don't tell you the truth is that they're making lawyers that were otherwise judicious about suing, forcing the sue on a large amount of cases that probably would never have been sued on had they just not tinkered with the system. That's my whole point. That's if I made any point whatsoever. And with all these tort reform, they also got all kinds of rules about how you treat medical bills at trial. This all these changes, everything they could do is to try to keep verdicts down. So I feel like when I file a lawsuit, I litigate, that I'm going to court with one arm behind my back because of every rule that's passed is against the plaintiffs. And that's the victims. So they say plaintiffs' lawyers and say, oh, it's just a lawyer griping. But who do plaintiffs' lawyers represent? The innocent victim. We represent the innocent victim that was hurt by the defendant who was probably not paying attention and rear-ended somebody at 40 miles an hour in broad daylight. It happens all the time. Runs a red light after it's been red for 3 to 4 or 5 seconds. These are just horrific accidents that are game-changing, that just change people's lives forever. So who benefits from this? Insurance companies, because if they can keep verdicts down, they make more money, and that's what it is. But I see we're running out of time. I really appreciate you allowing me to use this program to get on a soapbox. I consider it to be a PSA, but it's just the average citizen just doesn't know this stuff until they have a car wreck. So this has been Terrence Gross. I practice law with my 3 sons. They are my law partners. We have 5 offices throughout the Panhandle. Pensacola is our primary office, Pensacola and Savannah, but we're also in a beautiful office in Milton, in Crestview, in Mary Esther, and in Navarre. We love seeing people face-to-face. If you retain us, we'll see you face-to-face. We'll Zoom with you, email, text, however you wish to communicate. We're into communicating, and if you wish to call us, 850-434-3333, or visit us on the web at grossandschuster.com.
Terry, it's always a pleasure. Every time you're on the show, I learn something. It's so informative. Give that phone number one more time in case someone has a question for you or would like to talk to you about their case.
850-434-3333.
All right. Thank you so much, sir. Appreciate all that you do for us and for the community. Thank you so much. Terrence Gross with Gross & Schuster on Pep Talk.